fills up our plates. Papa's saying grace. Louisiana living sweet as sugar.
Welcome to the Story Table, brought to you by Providence Church in Lake Providence, Louisiana, where they want you to know that you are loved. Sierra Story, Chapter 3. It had been 5 years. It felt like yesterday. Brandon was only 8. 8 is a baby. 8 is still in love with Mama, still needs band-aids and hugs in equal measures. 8 is minor league baseball and catching fireflies. Sierra knew something was going to happen that day. She knew it the way you know something is up when your belly is swollen with baby and little signs start going off inside. Both times, with the twins and with Brandon, Sierra had waited and held the secret to herself until big, visible signs went off and she couldn't wait any longer before going to the hospital. Sierra had felt the little signs that whole day. When she dropped Brandon off at Trey's birthday party, he'd hugged her 3 times. When she got out to help him carry his sleeping bag in, he had hugged her at the car. When she told him goodbye at the door, he had hugged her again. Sierra was backing down the drive when Brandon had come flying out of the house, waving her down. She lowered her window. "I forgot to tell you to tell Daddy I love him," Brandon had said, reaching in the car to give her another quick hug. He told her he loved her, and she was the best mother in the world. She had wanted to take him home right then, but that felt stupid. There were other signs that day. He had left his room too neat. The tidy room bothered her all evening, and she didn't know why. Of course, she wasn't actually thinking he wouldn't come home again. Before something like that happens to your family, you never think it actually will on the day it actually does. You've always worried for nothing on all those other days. Then your kids came home, and you passed their bedrooms that night, feeling grateful and silly at the same time because of all the things you had thought. No, Sierra never really thought about anything bad happening that day. She just kept thinking that things were not right, and she couldn't put her finger on it. Several times that day, she felt like she was forgetting something important, and a couple of times, she noticed she was holding her breath like a person does right before they do something they've never done before. Sierra knew every detail of that fateful day. She had asked endless questions of everyone who could give her answers. The little boys had played in the lake all afternoon. This would probably be the last lake day of the season. The water was already noticeably cooler. Trey and his mom had gone around and around about a swimming party, and she had finally given in. Ellen, you see, was a nervous woman. She stood guard on the dock all afternoon, pleading with the boys to be careful. They had dove and swam and raced and wrestled. Imitating the preacher at the First Baptist Church, they had dunked each other in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Once while they were swimming, Brandon splashed about and screamed, even disappearing briefly, before he resurfaced to yell that he was being taken down by a gator. As Ellen recovered from a mild heart attack, the boys shouted and whistled their appreciation. Trey was inspired to go to the dockhouse for his alligator float, a big green inflatable pool toy that lasted about 15 minutes before they managed to puncture and drown it. Then they had cake and ice cream on the dock. Most of the cake, sans frosting, was thrown into the lake, where it was nibbled suspiciously by little minnows. This, of course, led to fishing. They spent an hour and a half rounding up old cane poles and talking Trey's mom into taking them to buy crickets. They fished about 20 minutes. The boys played until dark 30. Trey's grandparents showed up just as the last little boy finished his bath. 6 tired soldiers clad in mandatory white T-shirts and boxers lined up to say hello. Trey's mom put some coffee on while Trey ripped into his last present. Walkie-talkies! Trey's gift was pronounced cool and awesome and re-energized the unit. By the time the coffee had finished dripping, the boys had harassed Trey's mom into letting them go back outside to try out the new walkies. She put up a valiant argument, They were just out of the tub, and it was close to bedtime. But in the end, her dad teamed with the boys, and she surrendered. 30 minutes tops, she said, relenting. Later, she'd say over and over to anyone who would listen that she was sure she had told the boys to stay off the dock. The adults sat down at the kitchen table with their coffee, and the boys took off with the walkies. From here, the story was pieced together from the little boys' accounts. They had divided into two groups. The first few minutes were wasted in an argument on who would be the Americans and who would be the bad guys. The bad guys' nationality didn't need to be specified. They only recognized two armies, the Americans and the bad guys. Brandon was determined to be an American. This brought a sad smile from Sierra the first time she heard it. The last time the boys saw Brandon, he had told his first lieutenant he was going to hide behind the house. His soldiers were supposed to chase the bad guys towards him so he could scare them good. No one really knew what happened after that. It was mostly guesswork. Evidently, Brandon had decided to hide on the dock, and somehow, in the dark, he must have tripped and fallen. Their best guess was he had taken a blow to the temple by a pointed cypress knee growing close to where his body was found. The autopsy said he was unconscious when he hit the water. Sierra had been standing at the kitchen sink that evening when she heard the phone, her dishwater growing cold. She'd been thinking about Brandon. He had seemed so small that afternoon, and she hadn't wanted to leave him. He wasn't much on staying away from home at night. She'd wanted to tell him he didn't have to. She'd wanted to tell him he was young, and there would be many more opportunities to stay overnight. By the time Sierra reached for a dish towel and dried her hands, the ringing had stopped. Plunging her hands back into the lukewarm water, she finished scrubbing the skillet and pulled the plug in the sink. The gurgle of water eclipsed the low rumble of Sonny's voice from the den. She rinsed and dried the large black skillet that once belonged to her mom, replacing it beneath the oven. A familiar longing for her folks swept over Sierra's emotions. 2 years ago, they had shocked everyone in Providence by selling the farm and moving to Florida to live in a condo 6 blocks from Sierra's younger sister, Mary. Her parents weren't the typical golfing seniors, and her mother had never liked the beach. Sierra knew the move was all her dad's idea. What she didn't know was why her mother always gave in to him so quickly, or why she was always putting his wants above her own. It was as if she could never do enough to please him. I guess it's her generation, Sierra thought. Folding the dish towel lengthwise, she placed it beside the sink and switched off the kitchen light. She turned to find Sonny standing in the doorway, the light from the den framing his silhouette. Sierra flinched visibly. "Whoa! What are you trying to do, scare me to death?" Sonny didn't answer. "Sonny?" "Babe, that was Trey's grandfather." "What in the world? Why was he calling this late?" Sonny flipped the switch back on, and his face stopped Sierra cold. "What, Sonny? What is it?" "We got to go to Ellen's," Sierra interrupted him. "It's Brandon. What's wrong with Brandon?" Sonny hesitated.
"They can't find him, Cece."
"Find him?" Sierra could hear herself parenting Sonny. Instinctively, she knew this was the moment she had been dreading all day. She wanted Sonny to talk, and she wanted him to wait. She wanted time to stop, to let her hold on to something. "Find him, Sonny? What do you mean, find him?" Sierra forced herself to breathe. "The boys were outside, Sierra, playing hide-and-seek. Ellen started calling them in, and everyone came but Brandon. They can't find him." "So he's playing a joke on them." "This is stupid. Everyone is overreacting," Sierra thought. "You know Brandon, Sonny, he's hiding." "It's been a while." Sierra tried to think, tried to fight the panic she felt rising, building from somewhere deep within her soul. "I'll get the twins and we'll drive into town. He's going to be in big trouble when I get hold of him." Sonny shook his head. "I don't think the twins should go." "Why shouldn't they go?" Sierra started to argue. This was ridiculous, but something in Sonny's voice froze the words in her throat. She watched as he picked up the phone and called her brother. He asked John to come over right away and bring Charlotte and the baby. Sonny's voice got John's attention as well. He must not have asked any questions because Sonny was headed upstairs now, probably to tell the twins.
Tell the twins what?
Sarah forced her legs to move. She took the stairs two at a time.
She found Sonny standing between the twins.
Their eyes were locked on his face. They looked like matching bookends. Sonny was explaining that he and their mom were going to ride into town. Uncle John and Aunt Charlotte were coming over to stay with them. Normally, Luke and Lolly loved to play with little Nate, but they could tell something was up, something their dad wasn't saying. Lolly's big blue eyes were solemn as she asked what was wrong. "Nothing for you to worry about," Sierra had answered, knowing deep in her heart that she would never tell a bigger lie. She hugged them both hard. Scared and unsure of what else to do, Luke coughed dramatically. "Mom, you're squeezing the life out of me." Sierra relaxed her hold as truck door slammed outside. "That's them," Sonny said, nodding towards the door. The twins raced down the stairs to open the door. Sonny and Sierra paused briefly, reading one another's thoughts and resisting the urge to find solace in an embrace, anxious to get to Ellen's and to Brandon. They could see cars and trucks and flashing lights a mile from Ellen's house. Their stomachs gripped and rolled as Sonny reached for Sierra's hand. She tried to pray. If this were happening to someone else, she would pray. Why couldn't she pray? Trey's grandfather met them at the truck when they pulled in. They could see Ellen in the backyard holding her head with both hands. There were people everywhere. Sierra told herself again that everyone was overreacting. The lights of the sheriff's car twirled soundlessly. Ellen's yard was lit up like the middle of the day from all the headlights. Sierra thought it strange to do something as ordinary as open and shut the truck door when her world was teetering on its edge. "I'm sorry, Sonny," the older man said, clasping his hand on Sonny's shoulder. "I don't know what happened. They just went outside for a few minutes." "How long ago? How long's it been now?" The question hung as Sonny tightened his grip on Sierra's shoulders. Mr. Van pushed the indiglo feature on his watch. "It must have been around 9 o'clock when the boys went out. 9:30 or so when Ellen started calling them. It's probably been 1:45. Heck, we looked for more than 1 hour before we even got nervous, knowing little boys and all. Figured he was fooling with us." Mr. Van's voice trailed off to a mumble. They watched the sheriff approach, hat in hand. Judy Nolan, Sierra's best friend, made her way to them at the same time, placing an arm around Sierra without speaking a word. "Sheriff," Sonny said, nodding, "what's next?" "Well, Sonny, we've searched the neighborhood. My boys have been in and around every house on this street and then some. If I could talk to you alone." Sierra spoke up then. "Say what you need to say." Her face was hard, her voice cold and blunt. She could feel everyone's eyes, people she'd known all her life. She felt like the wreck people slowed to see on the highway, anxious for the victims, but glad it wasn't them. Sonny looked at the sheriff. "Go on, Sheriff. What?" Sheriff Mack met Sonny's gaze, avoiding Sierra's. "I was about to call the state police. They have a search and recover team." At first, his words were empty, hanging in their midst. Sonny was almost whispering now. "You think he's in the lake," he said. "You think he's..." Sierra's knees buckled. She felt nauseous. "All I'm saying is that we need to rule it out." One of his deputies called out, and Sheriff Mack gratefully turned towards him. Sonny began to stride towards the dock. Sierra wanted to follow him, but several ladies were trying to coax her into a lawn chair someone brought from the porch. "Oh, good," thought Judy. "That would fix everything if she would just sit down." "I don't want to," Sierra began. "Oh, you need to sit down, honey," one of the ladies said. "Why?" shouted Judy Nolan. "Why should she sit down?" Judy shoved the chair so hard it turned over. The other women exchanged looks as Judy took Sierra's arm and led her to where Sonny was standing on the dock. He reached for his wife, burying his head in her hair. "Sheriff Max calling in divers." "Divers. Brandon swims like a fish." They stood there, gazing at nothing. Suddenly, Sonny began to take off his shirt. "No, Sonny," Sierra cried. He ignored her. Ignored the sheriff, the deputies, and the crowd, and took off his socks and shoes. Sierra grabbed his arm. "Don't!" Sonny Gray turned and looked his wife in the eye. He pulled his arm gently from hers. "If my son is in that water, I'll find him." Sierra looked at Sheriff Mack for help. Instead, he sat down on the dock and began to take his shoes off, too. Every man in the crowd followed suit. Ellen dropped to her knees. Judy stood as close to Sierra as she could without standing on top of her. The men dove randomly, standing on the bottom of the lake. For several minutes they dove and searched and resurfaced for air to dive again. Once Sierra turned towards the house and saw Trey and the other little boys, their faces pressed against the glass of the sun porch windows. She wondered who was in the house with them, and she wondered why she was thinking about that. After 10 or so minutes, one of the deputies, Ed Hill, had an idea. The men lined up on the lake bank side by side, stretched out on both sides of the dock. They began to walk together into the dark water. Joe Lowry cursed under his breath a little ways out. All eyes turned to him as he explained that he had cut his foot, probably on a broken bottle. "Is it bad?" his wife called. Joe looked at her sharply. After that, the only sound heard was the lapping of the water around the men's jeans as they walked deeper into the lake. The water rose to chest level. They would have to begin to dive soon. "Oh, God!" The cry came from Ed. He was right beside the dock. Sonny half swam, half ran to him as well as he could against the weight of the water. The line moved in, forming a semicircle as the two men disappeared below the surface. When Sonny stood again, he held Brandon in his arms. Sierra watched in shock, no sound coming from her lips. She tried to understand what she was seeing, but she couldn't grasp it. She tried to turn the idea around in her head to find a place to hold on to it, but her mind kept slipping off, and then everything went black. In the 5 long years since they lost Brandon, Sierra had gone into his room exactly once. He needed clothes to be buried in. Sierra overheard her family whispering about it that day. They were actually considering picking them out without her. She walked resolutely up the stairs and opened the door without a moment's pause. When she came down again, she handed her mother a pair of brown loafers, khaki pants, a navy blazer, a white shirt, and a tie emblazoned with alligators wrestling in a ring refereed by a Big Mouth Bass. Brandon had loved that tie. She remembered how he grinned when she gave it to him. Sierra fully expected her mother to question the tie. She did. "Sierra, baby, don't you think a nice little red tie would be better?" "Better?" Sierra looked at her mother. "Better?" She thought about what else she wanted to say, and then she walked out onto the porch. Elaine May's heart twisted miserably as she stared at Sierra's back. Elaine was the typical Southern lady. She might drive a bean truck and host a baby shower on the same day. She might spend the morning canning peas and the afternoon babysitting her grandchildren. But whatever she did it with class and style, her makeup on and her hair fresh from the beauty parlor. She was at church more than once a week, played bridge on Thursdays, and never, ever bucked convention. Convention didn't allow one to bury their grandson in a theme tie. Elaine wished Sierra would have let her go with her the first time she went into Brandon's room, but she wasn't surprised. Sierra had an aversion to letting anyone help her with anything. She had been fiercely independent from birth. Sierra had been fussy and put out for the first few months of her life, but she had quickly turned into charm plus as soon as she could crawl. All she had wanted was to propel herself at her own whim and no one else's. "Me do it" proved to be more than Sierra's first full sentence. It was to be her mantra for life. Sierra and her mother's relationship had always been rocky, unlike that of her other two children. Elaine knew Sierra had always thought of her as a dish rag, a doormat. Sierra adored her daddy, but she made it clear that she thought her mother lived for him too much and for herself too little. Once, when she was 16, they had argued over it. "All you ever think about is what Daddy will say. I'll have to ask Daddy. Daddy would let you do anything you want, but you act like you have to be at his side 24 hours a day. For goodness sakes, Mom, get a life." Elaine May had surprised them both by popping Sierra's face with her open hand. It was the first and last time she had ever raised her hand in anger. She immediately hugged Sierra to herself and kissed her red cheek. Then she walked out of the room. They never spoke of the incident again. Elaine May wondered what Sierra would think if she knew the whole story. She had vowed years ago to make her husband forget what neither of them wanted to remember.
She would earn Jim's forgiveness or take her last breath trying. Elaine folded the little tie and placed it in the front pocket of the blazer, one end barely showing. After seeing Marvin off on his morning ride, Ruth took her Bible and went to her favorite quiet spot on the porch. She set her coffee with its "Have You Hugged a Rancher Today" logo beside her chair and drew a napkin over her knees to ward off the morning chill, opening her Bible to Psalms. Her habit was to read a Psalms and a proverb each day and then treasure hunt with no set pattern. Ruth tried to read, but her mind wandered. She kept seeing Sierra's face. She physically shook the image away and looked back down at the small print. But instead of hearing God's word, she heard Sierra and how she had sounded on the phone last night. They had just gotten in from their anniversary supper when Sierra called. "It's no use, Aunt Ruthie. He won't ever do it, and I just don't have it in me to plead with him. He won't even hear me out. I've a good mind to come out there myself right after the twins' graduation. As long as he has this farm, he wouldn't miss me." Ruth had clucked and smoothed over Sierra's ruffled feathers like an old setting hen. She knew Sierra didn't mean it. She'd never leave Sonny. She knew Sierra still loved Sonny, even if Sierra didn't know she did. Ruth tried to suggest that Sierra call her Mom, but she adamantly refused. No, she would lecture me about giving in and meeting Sonny halfway, but what she'd mean is give up and do things the man's way. Ruth wondered if Elaine would ever open up to Sierra. She had talked to her niece for another 10 minutes, putting in a few subtle hints about trusting the Lord that seemed to miss their mark. She had promised to stay in touch and told Sierra to pass out hugs and kisses to her family. Ruth tried several more times to read. Each time she saw Sierra, Sierra's a child, Sierra's a teenager, Sierra at the funeral, Sierra last year. Finally, she stopped and shared an inside joke with her very best friend. "Well, Lord, it takes a while to get this old lady's attention, doesn't it? Might you be trying to tell me I need to pray for that girl and her family right now? I'm slow, but I'm steady. Lord, it's been 5 years since that sweet little boy died, and Sierra still hurts so badly. I know that poor girl's tired of hurting. I also know there was a day when her heart was knit with yours. There is a lot of scar tissue around her soul, Lord, but you're in the business of restoration. Seems to me you're stirring in that family. I know you desire to bring healing to them. I pray Sierra would hunger for you so she can find rest and peace." Ruth took a long sip of her coffee, just as one might do if they were having coffee with a friend, and went back to her praying. Sierra stood outside the door to Brandon's room, oblivious to the petitions being offered on her behalf. She'd almost gone in there last night after talking to Aunt Ruthie on the phone. Like so many other times, she had stood with her hand on the doorknob. She might have gone in, too, if Sonny hadn't called to her, wanting to know if she was coming to bed. Sierra knew Sonny wanted to clear the air between them. Neither of them liked to go to bed angry. Only Sonny, like all men everywhere, had another reason for wanting to clear the air. Sometimes that amused Sierra. Last night it made her angry. But it was morning now, and the house was empty. Luke and Lolly had just left for school, and Sonny had left for the farm hours ago. Sierra stared at the door. She wavered and took a step backwards. "It's been 5 years," she scolded herself. "Open the door. Just turn the knob and open the door." Sierra didn't know why she needed to go in his room so badly, but she had felt drawn to it for weeks. The first few years after she lost her son, everyone had told her she needed to go in his room. Funny how they all thought they knew what was best. They thought it'd be best if she cleaned his room out, best if she sorted all his stuff. In their wisdom, they even decided she should keep a few of the most special things. She had made it clear she had no intention of doing anything they suggested. After a while, they had given up and left her alone. Sierra thought their ideas were ridiculous. Everything of Brandon's was special. What if they knew she still had his toothbrush? What if they knew she had taken it from the kid's bathroom the day after the funeral and put it in the bottom drawer of her vanity? They'd probably have her committed. Sierra thought about her best friend Judy and almost smiled. Judy would tell them to mind their own business in a heartbeat. Sierra stared at the door. She remembered hearing once that courage is showing bravery in the face of fear, that you can't have true courage without first being afraid. Well, she thought, I must be mighty courageous because I sure am scared. Sierra turned the knob and pushed the door open slowly. Long moments passed as she stood in the doorway. She had prepared herself to get hit in the gut, but it was still more than she bargained for. Brandon could have almost straightened his room that morning and gone to school with the twins. Sierra moved forward slowly, her eyes canvassing the room warily until they came to rest on his bulletin board. It was pretty bare. He had thought he needed one because the twins had one, but he hadn't really been sure what was supposed to go on a bulletin board. It held three red ribbons, two blues and a white, one at field day on the last day of second grade. He and Trey had tied for the coveted overall winner. Sierra looked across the room at the trophy. She could almost see him standing there holding it, a big gap in his top teeth. A white certificate from Vacation Bible School was taped to the bottom frame, and a safety pin secured a picture of his brother and sister holding him upside down in the living room. The only other item was a picture of Brandon and Trey taken in the dugout during a minor league game. They were leaned against the dugout wall like veterans, small but cool veterans. Sierra's fingers traced the image of the little boy with the dark brown hair and olive skin. The chocolate brown eyes looking out of the photo were mirror images of her own. Unlike his brother and sister, whose coloring and mannerisms were all sunny, Brandon had looked like a tiny Sierra from day one. He had been such a surprise in so many ways. Although they'd meant to have more children someday, he wasn't exactly planned. Still, after they got over the initial shock, the whole family looked forward to the new addition. The twins were old enough to understand they were getting a baby. Lolly wanted a sister and Luke a brother. Sierra hoped they wouldn't both get their wishes. Halfway through her pregnancy, Dr. Kane confirmed it would be a single birth. With the twins, she had been forced to bed 4 weeks before her due date. But her pregnancy with Brandon was uncomplicated, his delivery short and uneventful. Sierra thought back to the chaos of the first few months of the twins' lives. She had been thrust into unknown territory and double duty. It was wonderful and hard, exciting and scary. On the other hand, when Brandon came, he was such a happy baby, an easy child. It was almost as if he fit into their lives without a ripple. Actually, Sierra thought, everything about Brandon had been easy. Until. Sierra sat on the edge of Brandon's bed, her heart hurting. She and Sonny had often talked about how the pain of losing Brandon was a physical one that rocked their whole bodies. That was in the early days after his death when Sonny would talk about it. Not even a year later, he had just stopped. He didn't want to talk about Brandon and he didn't want her to. "We've got to move on, Cece," he said. "You're making it worse for everyone. The twins need you." Sierra translated his words into guilt and added it to the grief that tore at her soul. Talking about Brandon was healing to her, but no one wanted her to talk. Even her parents didn't know what to say to help. So when she brought his name up, they looked to change the subject. That's what most people did. When she saw his classmates and their moms uptown, they rambled on about everything and nothing. She always wanted them to say something about Brandon, but they avoided his name at all cost. He had been here. He had lived for 8 years, and they all wanted to pretend he had never been. There were a few exceptions. A couple of her closest friends let her talk about him. And then there was always Aunt Ruthie. She had a gift of knowing when to talk and when to listen. But Sierra had longed to talk about Brandon with Sonny, to laugh and cry and remember, to feel his loss together. Sierra finally quit wiping at the tears flowing down her cheeks and let them fall freely off her chin and onto her nightshirt. She opened the drawer of the nightstand beside Brandon's bed, finding the Precious Moments Bible she had bought him that last Christmas staring up at her. Picking it up, she wiped the dust off its cover, her touch lingering on his name embossed in gold on the lower right-hand corner. After Brandon's death, Sierra had continued to go to church, She sat with Luke, Lolly, and Sonny and sang the great hymns that once spoke to her soul. Only now, they were just words and melodies. She had loved church since she was a little girl, and she continued to go through the motions. But she held her heart apart, playing the same game every Sunday. As far as her friends knew, she was leaning on the Lord. Sierra had always had the answers for everyone else, even the scriptures to back them up. All her life she had counseled others to just trust in the Lord during times of heartache and sorrow. But when her turn came, the naivety of her words came back to taunt her. Before Brandon's death, Sierra had been able to balance evil in the world with what she knew of God and the free will he had given man. She had been willing to rest in his omnipotence. But when he let Brandon fall in that dark water and die alone, her box had turned over, and everything she once believed had tumbled out. She knew her heart was cold, and she didn't care. "You're a hypocrite, Sierra," she whispered. Sierra replaced the Bible, smoothed the bed, and left the room.